This is Wells Tech, a weekly show exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. Your hosts are Sally Draper and Martin Spriggs. Wells Tech is produced by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Hello again, everybody, and welcome back to Wells Tech. This is episode 518, that's 518, recorded on October 10th, 2017, a little show about technology and ministry. So glad you joined us. My name is Martin Spriggs, and I'm joined, as always, by the lovely and talented Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, how are you?
I am very good, Martin. Happy to be joining you, but I'm kind of cold, actually.
Oh, no. Why is that?
Experienced our first frost overnight here in lovely New Ulm, Minnesota.
No.
So I've got my sweater on, and it's time to think about.
We're up in northern Wisconsin on Sunday. I mean, northern, I don't know. Some people would probably call that not quite as north as they would think, but up by Marinette and Crivitz in that area and Oconto. And it was almost, it was upper 70s on Sunday. Just amazing. And unfortunately, because it was, we've had such a warm fall, we went up to kind of do fall colors and there wasn't a lot up there. So we ran around and looked at waterfalls all weekend though. So that was a lot of fun.
And your video really froze on me. So hopefully everybody else heard that exciting stuff you said. I'm sure it was a lot of fun.
Sure it was exciting. Yes. Well, put on another sweater, light up the furnace. So I hope your mobile home, no, it's not a mobile home, it's a RV, has sufficient air conditioning and heating and cooling.
Yes, definitely.
Good.
Keep us comfortable.
All right. Well, we are in the month of October, and despite the temperature, our focus is on a very hot topic, and that is video in ministry. And we kicked it off last week talking about video, this week about content for the most part and why you ought to be thinking about video. And we're going to continue our conversation about video this week, talking about the tech side, which is maybe always the fun part for us to explore new technologies, new applications, kind of the bells and whistles of capturing video and editing video. And there are lots of things to talk about. I'm not even quite sure where to start. I think maybe with the heavy hitters. I mean, there are some, you know, kind of staples that most people would need to use to craft or edit the video that they've captured for whatever purpose, whether it be sermon video, Bible class, or promotional video, an event video, those kinds of things. Where would you like to start, Sally?
You know, Martin, I think top on both of our lists is a product from our friends at TechSmith, and that's Camtasia. It's a video editing software that's super powerful and very user-friendly. And I'll just say right off the bat that most of this video editing software performs the same or does the same kind of functions. So once you find one that you're comfortable with, then I think you're set. Just so happens that we really like Camtasia, and they do have a 30-day free download, so you can try it out. You can make a video or two during that time and see how it works for you. It's funny that we're talking about this because I kind of go through seasons of video creation, and then I don't do as much video editing, and I just got done with a video editing project, and I did things like split out the audio and video, so I recorded it all together, but then I split it out and was able to delete the audio and re-record the audio if I needed to, splice in different things. I did transitions. I did blurring out part of the screen, which Camtasia is really great at doing that. And so I just was again convinced of what a great tool Camtasia is. Kind of falling in that same ballpark, and one that you have experience with is Adobe Premiere. Is that what you use for Wells Tech?
I do, and that comes along with the Creative Suite. So you're taking it up a notch when you're talking about Premiere. That's what a lot of professionals will use. Not that some professionals don't use Camtasia, but I'd say Camtasia is probably got its roots in screencasting and then editing screencasts, although it can be much more. I'd say one advantage, don't know if this is a true advantage, but I would say lower cost of entry for Camtasia. Also, excellent educational videos. That's kind of the place they, the space they play in. So they do an excellent job with educational videos. So I think the barrier to entry is smaller, first of all, price, but also learning curve. They make things pretty easy. When you get into a product like Premier, not only does the price go up, but I think the learning curve goes up. And I would say I'd throw in Apple's Final Cut Pro into that as well, which is a Mac-only product. Adobe Premiere is Mac and PC. We should also say Camtasia is Mac and PC. There is some differences between the two, the Camtasia product for Mac and PC. I'd say the PC version is a little bit better and a little bit faster even on the PC side. I think the cost is, I'd have to check on the cost, but I think it's a similar cost for Camtasia. But yeah, I use Premiere. It's also the product that we use for putting together all our together videos. So it's kind of the editor of choice for all the stuff the Synod produces, because it does have some pretty nifty features and it can produce longer videos and such. So that's kind of what we do. For pricing, the pricing is, like I mentioned, a little bit higher. I think the there is a pricing page that we can share as well. Adobe has switched to this subscription model, so you have to kind of figure out what products you need. They've got a neat photography bundle. If you are a photographer and want to use their Photoshop product and their Lightroom product, $9.99 a month is a really good deal. So $10 a month, $120 a year for Lightroom and Photoshop is an excellent deal. For single apps, you can pay $20 a month for all the apps in the suite. And so you got to be somewhat serious or kind of be responsible for a number of things for your organization to get Photoshop and Illustrator and InDesign. So if you're doing newsletter layout, that kind of stuff. And also Premiere, that's going to be $50 a month. And then if you throw in stock photography, they've got an $80 a month package. However, students and teachers, they have a different pricing model, which is a lot lower, and then schools and universities as well. And there is some nonprofit pricing around as well. So make sure before you take that plunge that you check out the available pricing models if you think you need to go to Premier. But there are other solutions as well, some that are even free that are out there, but sometimes you get what you pay for. So I guess, Sally, it depends on how much you use it. If you're using it a lot, you want to obviously take that into consideration. One thing that I think maybe I even had as a pick of the week a while back for Camtasia users, they got a pretty nice library of assets. So pre-roll, they've got audio, they've got video, they've got stills, you know, from their own library that you can do something, some pretty cool stuff with. So.
And one you didn't mention on the Mac side, Martin, is iMovie. I think that one maybe comes installed on Mac. Is that correct? Or
that's a great question. Since I haven't had to do a clean install on a Mac in a while, when I upgrade, I usually just do a reinstall. I'm not sure if it comes with it or not. But it's a simpler, kindler, gentler kind of editing experience, more drag and drop and just some basic features. But if you're just doing an occasional video, it's probably fine. The advantage with iMovie is that you can get it on a Mac, but you can also get it on your iPad or iPhone, I want to say, mm-hmm. too. So it's got an iOS version. Mm-hmm. So there's an advantage there. Probably speaking of iOS, we should not pass by this technology, the tech tool topic, without mentioning there are some pretty good products that live just on the iPad in the iOS world, because it has become an almost a natural video editor because of its touch interface. And the one that has probably kind of got the public eye right now that gets high reviews is something called Luma Fusion from a company called Luma Touch. And I believe you've got it up there. Is there a pricing there? I want to say it's $19.99 or something like that. It's not free. But it is getting high marks for its ease of use and compatibility. A lot of these now have the ability to output video that can be edited elsewhere. So back to Final Cut Pro or something else on the PC side. So that would be something to consider in addition to, like we mentioned, iMovie. And Adobe, not to be left out, also has some of its product line available on iOS and Android. And that is their Premiere Clip product. And what they do with a lot of their products, Adobe, including like Photoshop and Lightroom, is kind of a little bit of a stripped down but kind of touch-focused product offering that lives on these devices. So you do have that advantage, which is kind of a neat experience. I don't know if you've ever tried to edit video, Sally, on your phone or your tablet, but with a nice program, it does make some sense to be able to touch and edit things that way.
Yeah, I think just the fact that that camera, that video camera, is always in your pocket makes it a natural place to do your editing. If you can get it all done there and not have to go over to a desktop program, then why not? And so I actually mentioned one last week as my pick of the week. It was called InShot, and it's available for iOS and Android as well. So it can add different tracks and overlays and music and things like that. So even filters and things on your video. So if you want to get kind of artsy with what you're doing, you can do that in InShot. So lots of options there.
Yep. We mentioned Android. We mentioned Adobe Premiere Clip for Android. I'd say the menu of options on Android is a little skinnier. Mostly because there aren't that many popular Android tablets. You don't see a lot around, and when people are talking about video editing on tablets, they're usually talking about the iPad because it does such a nice job, and Android tablets haven't, I don't think, caught on as much. One that I ran across and heard some good things about is something called Action Director. So if you're looking for something for your Android tablet, that would be something to consider. A lot of people, we talked to a lot of people who are using Chromebooks, especially in the education space, some of our teacher friends. Then the news there is getting better because Chromebooks, at least some of the newer ones, can run Android apps. And that's a big win because then you can use some of these tools like Android or Adobe Premiere Clip and Action Director and some of those right on the Chromebook, and you don't need a Chrome extension or something that runs in the browser. You can use these Android apps, which are a little bit more powerful, it would be my guess.
Yeah. Before we leave Adobe, we should mention the fact that they do have another product called Adobe Spark.
Right.
The byline is make compelling animated videos in minutes.
And yeah, so the neat thing here is I would almost call this mixed media. So we've talked about some of these programs in the past, like Animoto and those kinds of tools. Adobe Spark runs on mobile devices, and it allows you to pull together different kinds of digital assets, including video, stills, still images, audio, and kind of melds that together into a video output. And I guess you wouldn't make a whole movie in this, but you could make some pretty compelling, and they've got some examples on their site, some pretty compelling visual videos that could probably be more suited for maybe short clips on your website, but maybe even best on Facebook or Instagram or something like that, where you're maybe doing something promotional. So there's some really cool tools that are available, and the Spark product, the online version, which are the desktop/online version, they do require a subscription, but I think the mobile version is free to use. So that would be something.
Looks like it's just for iOS, no Android version at this time.
Mm-hmm. Right. So. I heard a rumor, and I haven't been able to verify this, and we'll put a link in the show notes, but there was a Tech Republic article last month that seemed to suggest that Google, and this kind of jumps into a related topic, that Google is killing their YouTube video editor. Sally, I don't think we covered this when this article came out, but this seem like this might be a big deal because I know we've recommended this in the past, because this is maybe an alternative for Chromebook users because they don't have the ability to install apps, especially if they don't have the newer one that can install Android apps. So they kind of have to live in the cloud and use online video editors, and YouTube was one that had some video editing capabilities, and I thought even recently had added some new features, but this article seems to suggest that, hey, this may not be a real thing anymore.
Yeah, it looks like the article is from the end of July, Martin, and right. It said in September 2017, which would have been a few days ago when that ended. So that makes me a little nervous. I wasn't aware of this. And if I go to a video that I have on my own account, I should probably share my screen real quickly. We'll just test it out and see if those capabilities are gone. Perhaps a wedding video. Let's take a look at one of those. Oh, and there was the edit button right there. But certainly there's all looks the different like edit capabilities, enhancements, audio. We got music.
And maybe they're just retiring it slowly, or who knows? Who knows
what? Yeah.
But you do, if you are in Chromebook land, you do need some kind of online video editing. I know we've talked about, what was it, Wii Video in the past. There are probably some other products out there I'm not thinking of. But I think that's still an emerging space where you're trying to have to work around the capabilities or of a totally online world.
Yeah, emerging because I'm sure things will change, and in a year from now, it won't be a problem at all for Chromebook users.
Exactly.
Always
innovative. Sally, we probably should talk a little bit about live streaming because that is a mechanism for video, of course, and you can both live stream and capture at the same time, just like what we do during Hangouts, right?
Right. And interestingly, I was just talking with someone about live streaming and the fact that, I don't know, a week or two ago, maybe it was just last week that I did a ministry resource on using YouTube live streaming. And they said, you mean Hangouts? Well, yes, Hangouts is an option in there. But typically when we're talking about live streaming, we're talking about just one-way video. So you're at an event and someone far away can watch that event along with whoever's there in person because they're able to watch the live stream. Not really interactive, except maybe sometimes it has a chat window off to the side that someone could be monitoring and replying to or whatever. When we do Hangouts, obviously it's two or more ways. I think you can have like up to 15 people now in a Hangout with you. So I think live stream is more focused on the one-way communication, but certainly Hangouts are an option. And you can launch Hangouts and not invite anybody and just talk to the screen yourself. But what I found recently was an article on the Vimeo blog post where they went through all the different technical terms around live streaming and kind of explained things like bit rate and stream keys and Delta frames and all kinds of things like that. So if you're looking to up the ante and get in the live stream arena, then maybe you want to check out this blog post as a starting point. And why was Vimeo blogging about live streaming? Because just last month, they announced that they now have a live stream option through Vimeo. So we covered YouTube live streaming, which, by the way, is free. Vimeo, not so free. Theirs is definitely a paid-for option, and you'd have to look into more about that on their website. I don't have the prices right up in front of me, but I know it's not free. So most live streaming is a little bit more on the pricey side. You have to pay for those privileges with tools like LiveStream or even
especially
Final
if you want
Web
ad-free and ad-free experience.
Right. So when you're doing it over YouTube, definitely they can interject advertising. I was watching a video the other day, and this was the first time this has happened to me, but it was a YouTube video, and halfway through the video paused and an advertisement played. And then the video continued. I'd seen advertisements at the beginning, but now they're going to kind of interject them in the middle as well. So
it's just a bummer, especially if, let's say, teachers use it in a classroom, whatever. That's why I've always recommended using YouTube Red. It's a subscription model. You pay $9.99. I think maybe it's cheaper for education, but $9.99 a month, so $120 a year. But you get total ad-free experience for any YouTube video you play. So those pre-rolls or whatever, you don't have to wait. You can also download YouTube videos to devices, so iPads, iPhones, whatever. Plus, you get a free subscription then to Google Play Music, so you have unlimited play there as well. So that might be something to consider to get rid of that stuff if Definitely. You play it live. Although there's also tools to download videos, and then you don't have, you know, that that issue either. So.
Right.
We should mention live. We do mention live stream, and we'll be mentioning live stream here in a minute when we talk about Wells Now. And you've got experience with the Final Web live streaming solution.
Yeah, Synod uses live stream, and I've definitely used live streaming from Final Web. They do have a very affordable price point to enter, and it's based on your usage. So if you just have a few people watching, you don't pay nearly as much as those that have a large audience. It's a great
model for churches and schools.
Yeah. So, and again, kind of understanding a little bit of the terminology and things will go a long way towards setting this up. Because once you get it set up, you've got your encoder selected and in place, it's as easy as pressing a button to go live. So not as intimidating as you might think.
Right. Yeah. Man, it's on the mobile side, it's super easy. You open up an app, you press a button, and you're live streaming. You almost have to be careful that you're, you know, what you're streaming or when or of what. Probably before we leave the category of video tech, we should probably talk about stuff that is available to you, pre-recorded video, whether that's, you know, worship video or, you know, other kind of promotional videos or backgrounds or whatever. There's a ton of stuff out there.
Definitely. So for stock video, actually, probably one of my favorite finds of 2017, going to make it on the list of top picks here in a couple of months, is a website called Pexels, where they have a lot of stock photography. But if you go to videos.pexels.com, they have a lot of stock video, and all of it is Creative Commons Zero. It's free to download and use, and any type of setting, commercial or non-commercial, you can edit or whatever.
Cool. And how do you use it? What have you used it?
Well, I think, you know, as you mentioned, Camtasia has a lot of that, that, I don't know what you called it, pre-roll stuff that you can use as backgrounds and things like that as you're adding titles to your videos or things like that. It's just nice to be able to go and get some video of nature or whatever, just to interject if you're looking for a particular setting or whatever. Just totally free to download and make use of however you need. And similar sites, and I want to skip over the church ones, Pixabay is one that I use for photos, and they also have pixabay.com/videos to be able to look at stock video there as well. Again, royalty free. So those are two sites where you can just get general, you know, a water dropping or whatever it is that you're looking for, you can get some general video. I do want to make mention as well about a couple of Christian-related sites. First, from Church Media Spotlight, they have a page dedicated to videos, and they link to a lot of different stock video sites. So you might want to check this out, a whole lot more than what we've talked about today, but great stock video sites out there. And then we've talked about before on the podcast, Lightstock, which is not free, but has super high quality stuff. And they do give free downloads monthly. So you do have a small limit of the number of free downloads you can get based on things they're giving away. But definitely related to Christianity, and have resources available there that would be useful in a worship setting. So lightstock.com is
one that we've mentioned in the past, and we'll put a link to this as well. I'm putting it in the notes here. Worship House Media is a great site. I think they do offer from time to time free stuff, but this would be specific to worship service type settings. So Worship House Media.com has some excellent high quality stuff. So take a look there too. All right. So that's video tech, a lot to chew on. Your mileage may vary on any of these. Some of these applications require different kinds of hardware. That's always a concern when you're dealing with video and production. Obviously, the focus that we would encourage you to kind of spend more time on is the content side, and then worry about the editing side. But these are some cool tools that can make that content hum a little bit, and you can use some nice, I think, medium priced or even free tools and get some very good output from it. I don't think you have to break the bank to put some nice stuff up on your site or Facebook page or whatever it is that you're trying to do with the content. So,
excellent.
All right, Sally. I think we've come to that segment of the show where we look around the tech world and we ask what's new or what's news in tech. And Google was in the news this past week with a whole bunch of offerings. They've got new phones. Their Pixel line is out. They have a new Chromebook called the Pixel Book. Right? Mm-hmm. They have a whole set of speakers to compete with Amazon. So they've got an Echo competitor, and they've got a big, looks like a huge speaker that they claim has great sound. So they've got all kinds of things. One thing that I'm kind of excited about, and maybe we mentioned it last week, were the headphones that allow you to work alongside with the phone to do real-time or almost real-time translation. So we'll see how that actually works. But things are moving pretty quickly forward. So it's kind of a space race of sorts between Google and Amazon and Apple. They're all, you know, trying to one up each other, and it seems like every other month there's something new out there that taking it a one step further.
Yeah, probably the thing I'm most impressed with are those headphones, and just mainly because I've been watching Star Trek for a while, and I'm pretty sure they have those international translator things that
go from English to Klingon, and
And so we're there, folks. Star Trek has arrived. You put the headphones on, you speak, you hear their language translated to you. If they have the headphones, they hear your language translated to them.
Stuff, yeah.
Cool stuff.
We should maybe do a show on that kind of technology because it exists. It exists within Skype, for instance. We've never really tried it, so we'd have to find a guest that spoke a foreign language. You and I are just little gringos that kind of struggle. I shouldn't speak for both of us. I struggle with just one language, even though I took four languages in school. You know, not much has stuck with me.
Speaking of which, they have apps that you can point to a foreign sign and it'll translate the words on your screen.
Another thing we could talk about, sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should take a road trip out to someplace that where English is not the first language. I don't know if that's in the Germany. World Tech budget, but
Germany for the 500th anniversary of the Reformation would be really
hurry.
Nice. If you're looking for
weeks,
suggestions.
But, all right, let's go to, speaking of which, Wells Now is our next segment, and Interactive Faith. We talked about that last week, and last week was the beginning of a new online Bible study presented by Professor Joel
Otto.
Joel Otto. Professor Joel Otto from Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary, called Luther's Lasting Impact. So each and every Wednesday for the next 6 weeks, 5 weeks, through November 8th, 6 o'clock, 8 o'clock Central. He does it twice on Wednesdays. There's study guides. He's talking about some of the key themes that were part of the Reformation and made kind of Luther the special guy that he was. And I think this week we're talking about his translations, how important those were to getting the word into the hands of the people. So you will not want to miss that. If you go to wells.net/interactivefaith, you'll see all the information there and how to get hooked up through the live stream. And you can also watch it in an archived or on-demand fashion once it's all said and done. But it's kind of fun to join with all the other people. We had over 100 concurrent viewers at both or pretty close in both sessions. So, and in many cases, there were many more than one person sitting behind, you know, that viewer count. So I could say it's probably pretty safely there's 200-300 people out there joining that Bible study at the same time. So that's pretty cool.
It is cool. And I don't know, this Reformation 500 stuff, it's exciting. And Kevin and I have been reading one of the books that was published by NPH about Luther's protest.
Yeah, you mentioned it last week. That's awesome.
Yeah, I've got to get the name of it out here and share it because it's a really great book. And I'm just like, he's at the Wartburg now and mm-hmm. living the knight's life and cut off a bit. And so just really interesting to follow all the political. Right. And
yep, it's a very compelling story.
Definitely.
All right, Sally, we are up to our Picks of the Week segment, and you're up with a preview of a future theme of the month, which would be security. So you're going to tease us a little bit with a little security stuff, so go for it.
Okay, so I can translate what you just said because I've got my Google headphones on. I should have saved this for next month when we're doing
something. No, I'm sure you've got plenty more. This was just kind of an extra.
This is an article I came across in the LastPass newsletter last week, and it's called How to Hacker-Proof Your Email in 4 Steps. And what really caught my eye right off the bat was the fact that they said, typically we think of our bank and financial accounts as being the most important accounts we want to protect. But where does your bank or credit card link back to? Your email. Email truly is the gateway to your most valued and private information. And of course, if we stop and think, you know, that is definitely true for me, and I'm sure for many of our listeners that, you know, if I want to reset my password or whatever, they're going to tie into my email oftentimes. So they give you 4 different tips in this article. One is to create really strong passwords, and they give you some ideas there. The other is to add 2-factor authentication. So it's not just your email that resets that password, but you also have to, you know, have a message sent to your phone and okay it there or whatever the process might be for the different sites. And then I really like the third point in the article. It said to outsmart security questions. And, you know, we've been warned not to pick security questions, and now they don't even really come up on the list that are just really obvious, like what's your hometown or whatever, things that are pretty common knowledge that a hacker would have their hands on. But this tip actually said, rather than answering it, the question that it's asked, maybe it's your first pet's name or whatever it is, use a different answer completely and just know that answer, or spell your answer backwards or somehow encrypt that answer where you know how to type it in correctly, but a hacker wouldn't know how to type it in correctly.
Well, what was your first dog's name? And I would say Fluffy, and there's no way I'd ever name my dog Fluffy, but that would be my dog's first name. So
okay.
My dog's name. Yeah.
And spell that backwards and be able to type it backwards.
Oh, there you go.
And then you're in great shape, Martin.
Yep.
And then they go on to mention some precautions you can take outside your email. So it's a quick read. I would recommend everyone take a look at it. And, you know, just day after day after day, we hear about more data security breaches. I'd venture to say there's very few people that haven't had their information shared somehow if you have an email address that's been out there for a while. So take these precautions, change your email. I just changed my Gmail password after reading this last week, and it's a hard thing to do because you really don't want to go through all the places that you have that you're using that and reset that password, but it is important to do. So take it to heart, folks.
And just a public service announcement, if you use something like LastPass, which was the author of that article, there are many sites where it can change it for you. So there's a little button there that says, hey, change my password, and it'll go out and actually change it to a strong password. Doesn't always work, but I found that in some sites it works really well. So that's pretty cool, where you don't even have to do the work. It'll just kind of go out there for you. So
cool. Good stuff.
All right. Mine is a Windows related tip, and it is related to the Microsoft Edge browser. And I'm giving it a little love today because they are kind of putting a little more emphasis on their extension suite. Extensions are like Chrome extensions. So there's just an article released, this is digitaltrends.com. Microsoft Edge extensions now number more than 70. Now, I don't know how many there are in Chrome. There's probably 7,000. Microsoft only has 70. But I would say it's probably quality, not quantity. And this article does talk about that. Also, I ran across an article from Yahoo Finance that, and I noticed this in the store as well, that Microsoft Edge, his latest extension was 1Password, speaking of passwords. So I think all of the major password players are now in Edge extensions. LastPass is in there, 1Password. There's a couple others that play in that space now. And there are kind of the standards, ad blockers, the clippers, so clipping to OneNote or Evernote. Kind of name your favorite extension. There's a couple that I use for programming that now have made their way in there as well. And so it makes the browser a lot more usable if you're on the Windows 10 platform and Edge comes as the default browser. You can always install Chrome or whatever. But I find Edge to be faster. I find Chrome to be one of the slower ones. But I think there is a lot of good going on with Edge right now. So if you haven't tried it in a while, or you kind of dismissed it right away because it didn't have, that Chrome extension kind of capability, you may want to revisit it and see if those extensions that you need are available in Edge, and then kind of take advantage of some of the modern upgrades that Edge brings to the table on a Windows 10 platform. So take a look at that, especially if you're a 1Password user now. 1Password is cross-platform, works on phones, works on Mac, PC, now works in Edge. LastPass is the same kind of deal. So take a look.
So while you're talking, I'm busy looking for the answer to your question. How many Chrome extensions are there? I found one number of...
Because they go up all the time, I think.
Yeah, I found one number of 16,000. That was from 2011, though.
Oh, so I was way underestimated.
It's probably exponentially larger since then. The other thing that I noted that you said was Edge extensions, like Chrome extensions. And it reminded me, people always tease me, and it's a very common theme for people to tease about. If you're from the South, everything is a Coke. So if somebody says they want something a soda pop to drink, they say, I want a Coke. And the waitress often responds, what kind of Coke do you want? Oh, I want a Sprite, or whatever, because it's just what it is. And you have adopted that methodology when talking about extensions, because you couldn't refer to Edge extensions without referring to Chrome extensions,
because everybody knows what those are. Yeah,
that's the standard. That's who Kleenex, Edge is Coke, trying to catch
yep,
up with.
Exactly. Yeah.
Anyway, just kind of funny.
Yeah, I lived in the South for about 6 years, 5 years, and that was not in South Carolina. At least was not what they. Maybe because there were a lot of Northerners around and, it was in a congregation full of Wisconsinites for the most part. But that was not something I noticed there. But I know that is a thing. So it's Coke, pop, soda. I don't know what all the options are for different parts of the country. But
definitely Mississippi is Coke.
Okay. I would think Georgia would be Coke, home of Coke. So
yeah, that's true. Started.
All right, we need to run along here with our ministry resource. My ministry resource of the week, if I can just get it to load here, is what I entitle My Favorite Productivity Tip! ! Wow. And I won't go into all the details here, but I've mentioned this on the show many times. It's in our book, our project management book. I mention it. I thought, what better ministry resource than one that has kind of helped my ministry maybe more than any other productivity tip, and that is the Waiting For List. Simply a product of my research in productivity and especially the Getting Things Done methodology from David Allen. It's the simple concept of whenever you delegate something or ask somebody to do something or ask something of somebody, write it down. Note it somehow on a waiting for list. So you note what you asked for, what you expect, of whom you asked it, and when you made the request. So you always have a running little total of all the things that you are waiting for. Because that's one of the things that your brain just churns on thinking, did I ask that? When did I ask that? Did I ever get that? And that's what gets projects stuck. And waiting for a list gets projects unstuck. And that's really important. The cool part about a waiting for list is you can apply technology pretty easily. And a lot of the times when I'm asking somebody for something, or delegating something to somebody, it's happening via email, probably 90% of the time, or some digital form. And email is actually one of the easiest ways to kind of capture that whole transaction. And in my little blog post, I have a how-to video at the bottom that shows you how to set that up in either Outlook or Gmail. Email client probably has something similar. You just create a rule, and the way it works for these two systems is I just put my own email address in the CC, the carbon copy area, and when that comes back to me, the rule just pulls it right out of my inbox, so I never see it again in the inbox, but puts it in a waiting for list or folder. And then once a week, or maybe even more often, I'll check that list, that folder, and say, well, what did I ask of and for what over the week? And has that person delivered? Am I still waiting on it? Do I need to follow up? So my mind can rest at ease that I've captured that. I also talk a little bit about how I use OneNote for that, especially for things that aren't in email. Maybe it's a verbal conversation. Maybe it's a voicemail, leaving myself voice memos, those kinds of things. So take a look at the blog post if you are a person that has trouble trying to remember or is concerned about keeping track of things that maybe you've involved other people in helping you get done. My favorite little productivity tip, and that is a waiting for list. Sally, you've probably heard me talk on this topic 10, 20
Definitely.
Times.
Definitely. I just get nervous that my name ends up on that list. So.
It's on there for sure.
Yeah.
But you usually deliver. So.
Usually.
All right. We probably should get along to our community feedback, and that's all me as well. So I'm going to keep the floor. And I did run across and I put this in Twitter, and I'll just share the link to that as well. It's from, and we've already mentioned them at least once in the show, our folks, our good friends at TechSmith. They have a video series. This is part two of a two-part series, How to Make Video Before You Start Your First Video. So this is talking about the planning process, and this ties in real nicely to what we talked about last week, and we're going to talk about in a couple weeks with some professionals, talking about scripting and storyboarding and reviewing and how to gather materials and set up the equipment, just all kinds of good stuff related to what happens before you actually do the recording of the video. And this could be a promotional video, could be, you know, whatever. Just really solid tips. These guys know what they're talking about, and they put it in an easy-to-use format. And it's really down-to-earth. It's not necessarily always for professionals. It's for people like you and me who sit around a table at a church meeting or school meeting saying, how are we going to put this thing together? So they give you downloadable templates and real tips on storyboarding where you don't have to be an artist. They have some rather crude or elementary stick figures that they use and just kind of good general tools that you can use. So just thought I'd share that and take a look at that. If you are thinking about putting together a video for your church or school or ministry, probably a good thing to start. Take a look at both parts of this. There's a link in, I think, in this blog post to part one as well. So
Yeah, good stuff. My husband is at St. Paul's Church here in New Ulm. He just recorded the quarterly St. Paul's update. So we show a video at the end of services, and
what kind
they gave him a script. He actually narrated a PowerPoint video, turned a PowerPoint into video. So that's how they do it there at this time. So, yeah. Nice. So that's definitely awesome. Something happening in churches all over the place.
Yeah. Sally, we do have a video of the week.
Speaking of video, we have video, and that video ties back to our news and tech this week, where we talked about the Google event and all the things that were announced there. So there's a nice 19-minute video that pulls out the best of a long experience and gives you the best in 19 minutes. It was done by The Verge, and it covers all their next generation of Pixel smartphones, the new Google Homes, the Pixel Book, and definitely the VR, the headsets, all those kind of things. It's all in there. So check it out and learn more about the new Google products.
Very nice. Good show. Good stuff. Lots of options and things to think about and pray about as far as connecting these technology tools to ministry purposes. Just want to remind everybody where you can find us and the things that we've been referencing in our show notes page. That's at wellstech.wells.net. You can also leave comments and connect to us there as well through all our social networks. They're listed across the top of the page, top right. And you can leave a note there on any of the shows. You can see our ministry resources there as well. And email is always a way to connect with us as well, wellstech@wells.net. That's WELSTECH at WELS.net. We'd love to hear from you. Next week, we would love to have you come back again. We're going to continue our video theme for October and talk about branding and about these channels that are available to you, YouTube channels, Vimeo channels, live stream channels. Is it worth it? And how do you set them up and some things to consider and maybe some tools to make it a little bit easier? So tune in next week for that conversation. Thanks so much for joining us, and have a great week, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.